Hello, it's Wednesday, 1st of July. I'm Hannah Pearson from Pitt Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia.
So today we reached two milestones. We're halfway through 2020, and hasn't it been a year? And this is our 25th podcast. So happy anniversary to us.
Happy anniversary indeed. And to celebrate, we're revisiting our 20 for the 2020s travel wish list, which featured in our first podcast of the year back in January. So, let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Well, it seems like a lifetime ago that we produced our first podcast of 2020. In fact, our 20 for the 2020s wish list spanned two separate shows in early January. Since then, of course, travel and tourism in Southeast Asia and worldwide has endured really the most difficult 6 months in modern history, all triggered by that novel coronavirus, which emerged in the Chinese city of Wuhan in late December 2019.
Yeah, that's so true, Hannah. So much has happened in those 6 months, and hardly any of it has been any good at all.
Yeah.
Since those two January shows, the travel industry worldwide has largely shut down, particularly through March, April, and May of this year.
Mm.
Now, here in Southeast Asia, some countries are slowly starting to reopen, although domestic travel remains the priority for the moment as borders are either closed or strict quarantine rules remain in place. So it's within this context that we're going to review our 20 for the 2020s wish list, which is probably a subtle way of saying that not many of the predictions we made have actually come true.
No, yet.
Not yet.
So to recap on our objective all those months ago, back in early January, Gary and I put together 10 travel and tourism wishes each that we'd both like to see happen, either this year or in the coming years. And we put those together to make a top 20, which will be discussed in no particular order over two podcast episodes in January.
Yep. So here at the midpoint of 2020, let's retrace our steps and discuss 10 of those 20 wish list items. So let's get started, Hannah. What was the first item on our 2020s wish list?
Well, that's one of your rants, Gary. So if you remember, item number one was governments and tourism boards to stop annual volume setting.
Yeah, well, I've said this several times on the pod, Hannah. We really did need to come to an end of governments in particular setting these arbitrary targets for visitor arrivals during a year.
Yeah.
It doesn't really help the industry, as we've said before. It puts too much pressure on to meet targets. So, for example, this year, as we know, in Japan, it was the Tokyo Olympics year. A target was set for 40 million.
Mm.
Here in Malaysia, it was Visit Malaysia year, 30 million target. Yeah. In Thailand, which last year, I think, had about 39.8 million visitors, they actually lowered their target for this year because last year's growth was only 4%. Mm. So they were looking for around about 40.8 million visitors this year. Now, the problem in Thailand is that you have lots of different agencies making these tourism predictions. So you have the Tourism Authority of Thailand, the Thai Central Bank, you have the National Economic and Social Development Council, and also you have Airports Thailand.
Yes.
So you have these different agencies creating these arbitrary figures, which somehow the tourism players have to live up to.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, coronavirus has thrown all that asunder. It's been impossible to make predictions. We've seen a lot of reforecasting over recent months, haven't we? Everybody is trying to predict, well, what is actually going to happen for the rest of the year? But let's just hope that one of these outcomes is that actually we look at tourism actually as an industry itself, not just as a set of numbers.
Yeah, I mean, right now, when you're looking at arrival numbers, I mean, they're all zero. They're meaningless, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's actually no, very little sense in even looking at them other than to just say, wow, it's still zero.
Yeah. But that won't stop. As soon as borders are reopened, you know that these resets will happen and people will be looking at, you know, what can we gain for the second 6 months of the year. And in some countries, as we said before on the pod, Hannah, so I think Vietnam is a good example. Mm. In the first 2 or 3 months of the year, actually its arrivals were okay.
Done.
They were quite strong. Mm. So, you know, if it were able to open the borders, which we have no idea if that's going to happen, it may be able to set some kind of plausible target. But obviously now the focus is setting domestic targets, which is proving pretty tricky because obviously there are so many factors after a virus pandemic like this that are affecting people's ability and willingness to travel, not just internationally, but domestically as well.
Yeah, I mean, so then you end up with situations like there are in Thailand where they say, well, we had 12 million outbound tourists from Thailand last year. So if we convert X percentage, that means we're going to get Y percentage more domestic tourists. They're just pulling numbers out of thin air, aren't they?
It is, because it just simply doesn't correlate that way, does it? I mean, a lot of those 12 million outbound tourists probably did travel at home at some point during the year as well. You know, people like to have frequent holidays during a year.
True.
But there are so many different overlays after this virus, you know, the fear of the virus coming back itself, but also the economic uncertainty, those kinds of issues. It's just not really a time to be forecasting right now. We've just got to get the industry back up and running. I mean, it's really a day-to-day thing. You know from the agents and the industry that you're working with, it's tough right now.
Super, super tough. Yeah. Yes. So less volume setting.
So that's my rant over. So moving swiftly on, Hannah, item 2 on our 2020s for the wish list was one of your choices. Now, you said back in January, you said you would like to see Southeast Asia become the most desirable outbound market pursued by national tourism boards worldwide. So back in January, I asked you two questions about this, Hannah.
Yeah.
I said, where were we on that statement at the start of 2020? And where could we be by the end of the 2020, so in 10 years' time? And I guess we should overlay that with, well, where are we actually at right now in the midpoint of 2020?
Well, I mean, obviously, no outbound travel is happening right now from Southeast Asia, is there? And I think it's prohibited in nearly all countries, with a few exceptions for business travelers and things from Singapore to China. So right now, you know, no outbound is happening, but I think, and I still believe that Southeast Asia is a really desirable market, especially now. The countries here have handled COVID-19 in a really professional way. They have really flattened the curve, as they say. Right now, this is a market that is kind of ripe for tourism boards to try to attract to their countries again, if, and that's the big if, the governments here allow their citizens to travel outbound.
Because
that's the big question mark, isn't it? Whether they actually allow that to happen. So right now, this morning, yesterday evening, Europe announced that Thailand is going to be on this list of 15 countries that they will allow to enter into Europe. But that's only if it's reciprocal. Is Thailand going to let European travellers in? I don't know. Is Thailand even going to let Thai travellers out to Europe? Who knows? And will they let them back into Thailand without quarantine? Again, there are so many unknown questions.
Yeah, these are huge unknowns. And we've said beforehand, and one of the reasons that we started this podcast is we were getting the feeling when we started talking about this over a year ago, that Southeast Asia was the world's most dynamic region for tourism. And that spanned all aspects, so inbound, outbound, and domestic.
Yeah.
But outbound definitely had, there was this feeling that more countries around the world were really coveting travelers from different countries of Southeast Asia. Now, as you said, the situation with border reopenings is just a complete unknown right now. But, you know, there are countries dotted around the world. If you look at Australia as a good example, Macau, you know, they were starting to generate really big numbers of travellers from different countries across Southeast Asia, Europe too. You know, what's going to happen in future? Japan is another good example. You know, will that level of promotion back into these markets happen? Or we simply don't know.
Well, I mean, we've already seen it start to happen. So in countries like Singapore, JNTO, so the Japanese National Tourism Board, have still been running campaigns attracting Singaporean travellers, encouraging them to dream up their ideal trips to Japan. So they haven't laid off. And even in Vietnam, I think they are running a whole load of campaigns throughout Vietnam as well to still reinforce this idea of Japan being a really attractive destination for Vietnamese travellers to go to. So I think it's going to be interesting here because we will see some countries really hot on the pursuit, and I think Japan is a great example. And I think we will see other countries kind of step back, and that might be the opportunity then for some of the maybe not quite as popular countries to kind of get in there in Southeast Asia. If they're the ones, if they have a bit of budget and they throw that in there now and they start, promoting their country, they might well be able to kind of usurp some of these, more popular countries right now.
Yeah, I have this idea that, perhaps a couple of the island destinations in South Asia, Sri Lanka, for example, maybe Maldives, they may step up their promotions in this region. they're relatively COVID safe. They're yeah. island destinations. Yeah. Short trips are, you know, yeah. something you can do there.
Yeah, we exactly. might see that. We might, and Maldives did start to step up more across Southeast Asia last year. So, yeah, one to watch, Maldives. Let's see.
Yeah, as you said, the whole industry around the world is in complete flux right now. But I would think that, you know, travelers from this region will have some leverage going forward in terms of the yeah. choice and the pricing for the destinations they want to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Entry number three, which was a shared choice by both of us last time, better rail connectivity through Southeast Asia.
Yeah, well, this comes into focus primarily because we still don't know at the moment how people are going to feel about taking flights. You know, it's still in early stages. Here in Malaysia, it's, 3 weeks now since people can actually fly domestically.
Yeah.
Demand is still quite low. But, you know, as we said last week, we think people might be watching and waiting. There aren't any public holidays at the moment, so people are waiting to see what their options are for later in the year. But rail connectivity was starting to become a headline issue, particularly from China. So China was building these railways into Laos.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be, that will go up to the Cambodian border. Yeah. There were other railways being built in Indonesia.
Yeah.
Between Jakarta and Bandung.
Yes.
That's now going to be extended to Surabaya.
Mm.
We have the East Coast Rail Line here in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Philippines, there's going to be a circular line on one of the islands. So these are all forward planning. You know, these building rail networks take a lot of time. Yeah. But there was a view pre-pandemic that, you know, this was an opportunity to get more people traveling, particularly business travelers and short trip travelers within their own region and across borders in Southeast Asia. It takes huge investment, takes a lot of time, but you do feel that rail travel probably in the future will become more popular.
Yes.
It's just whether these new networks that are being built can actually join up.
Yeah, and then whether, I guess, the government will have funds still with all of this outlay that they're doing with, you know, economic stimulus packages. Are they still going to have the funds to be able to continue these infrastructure projects?
Yeah. And will they accept the funds from China? Because a lot of these are being Chinese funded and Chinese built. There are some issues in some countries of our region with China. We don't really know how that will happen. But you just suspect that these are critical infrastructure projects, which when countries do need to take a longer term view of economic recovery, they might help that.
Yeah, they're normally the ideal candidate for that, aren't they?
So that was item number three. So we're going to skip ahead to item number seven on our wish list, Hannah, which I think you chose.
Yeah.
And this was about an easing of visa restrictions for countries like Vietnam, Indonesia, and the Philippines.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually quite closely linked, I think, to the being a desirable outbound market, Southeast Asia. But I do feel now that Southeast Asia, they've got more of a position of power now, I think, especially countries like Vietnam. You know, they have been supporting Western countries and providing PPE. They've been doing a lot of smart political ploys. They have
keeping the pilot alive, as you mentioned.
Keeping this British pilot alive. And he's now going under physio or something, but they're really proud about that. They've also, they announced these e-visas, didn't they, for 80 countries, Vietnam. So there's a lot of machinations that are going on there behind the scenes and a lot of overtures from Southeast Asia. And I do just wonder that when countries are so desperate to get tourists back, they'll be looking, like we were saying, for COVID-safe countries. That's what Southeast Asia is. And maybe countries that are also offering that kind of similar easing of visa restrictions for them. So it could just be on the cards, you know. It might just change.
There is a feeling that, you know, that these visa issues that emerge. I mean, many countries around the world were easing visa restrictions, particularly for Chinese travelers, increasingly for some countries of Southeast Asia, Indian travelers as well, the big markets essentially. Yeah. But there is a feeling this whole thing may need to reset, and that if tourism is needed in future, maybe it won't be about visas anymore. Maybe it will be about vaccination. Maybe it will be about COVID safety.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure, and we're speculating, but you know, that whole visa issue, that there are two sides to it. One, it actually raises revenue for the country, for inbound tourists, but it does cause huge bureaucratic, and it's a disincentive to travel.
Absolutely.
You know, if the tourism industry really is to get back up and running across the whole gamut of the industry, it's going to need government to support to really relook at the visa issue.
It is, and I saw a really interesting image from The Economist this morning, and I'll put this in the show notes as well, that showed that it's actually countries from sub-Saharan Africa and Asia that typically have lower incomes but have to pay higher visa costs for Western countries. And the kind of what they showed was Western countries pay the least for any visa, you know, for any visas, despite having more wealth per capita.
Yeah.
So that's something interesting. Again, we'll see whether that will even out. Maybe they will still have visas, but will bring the visa costs down to make it more affordable, or they will speed up the process. Because again, in a lot of these countries, a typical Schengen visa, so a visa for the Europe, can take 2 to 3 weeks. You know, the same for the UK. It can really take a long time. So it's a big effort that you have to go to if you want to travel to these countries. You have to really want to go.
Yeah.
So flying is also a key part of the travel experience in Southeast Asia for business and leisure. So Gary, you chose airports that work, more Changi departure, less Changi arrival as topic 8 on our 20 for the 2020s bucket list. Tell us more.
Well, this is very much a pre-COVID issue. We both flew into Changi last year for ITB Asia, and we noticed that the terminal that you arrive at peak times, it's very crowded. The queues were much longer than they used to be and much slower.
Yeah.
Now, the general overall experience at Changi Airport is generally excellent.
That's fantastic.
The facilities, the amenities, the services, a lot of it is now frictionless, touchless. Mm. It is a brilliant, brilliant airport, but it did need to tweak that inbound arrival queues that you had. Now, obviously, in the months that we've seen, the traffic through Changi has just fallen off a cliff, such to the point that actually two of its terminals aren't currently operating. Mm-hmm. And it's deferred the construction of a fifth terminal for a couple of years.
Yes.
Now, a lot of that obviously is because it is such a pivotal hub from east and west, particularly to Australasia, Asia, into Europe, into the west. And that traffic just isn't moving right now. Mm. But in terms of the airports around our region, you know, Changi will always be the model to base your services on. Just finding a way to tweak that arrivals experience with everything else was a bit of a challenge. But, you know, again, as we said, the whole reset is on right now. We don't know what the volumes will be like flying into Changi anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and I was reading, you know, because they allow transit now through Changi from certain Singapore Airlines destinations. And on the transit, it's really limited experience now. So it's not the Changi airport that we used to know. So it's you have to go into your area, which is designated for you. You can't go to any restaurants. You can't go to any shops. You pretty much just have to sit there. I think you can, they said you can order food on an app and then they'll deliver to you, which I thought was a pretty nifty idea, but it's a very boring, boring experience compared to before. Maybe that's just the future of air travel.
Let's hope not. Let's move on swiftly to number 9, which is a super hot topic, Hannah.
Yeah.
How can destinations balance Instagrammability with creating over-tourism? Remember that word, over-tourism.
What's that? Yeah, I mean, this is not going to be an issue, I don't think, for countries this year, over-tourism. If anything, it's going to be under-tourism, isn't it? And countries struggling with too much supply. It's still going to come up, though. You know, I think destinations do still need to take this time to really think about how they can serve the community at large and not just tourists. You know, particularly when we're thinking about cruise ships, that was the obvious example we normally use. Even when you're thinking about Europe, so the cruise ships arriving in Venice or in Croatia and then they hop off and have a day and then hop back on the boat. But actually the spend in the community and is negligible compared to like, the negative impact that it has on the communities who live there. So now is the time for destinations to kind of redesign that flow of travellers and how they think that it should work. But yeah, I think this one is actually resolved. Over tourism is not going to happen in 2020.
It really, really has. Yeah, and all those countries that were and destinations that were worried about the impacts of over tourism are now worried about the impacts of having no tourists. It's polarized.
It's gone the other way.
Been a compromise solution there.
No. So on to number 13, which was one of only two or three items on our 2020s wish list where we actually overlapped. I had written greater intra-ASEAN travel, forging deeper links and leaving China and India aside. And Gary had written more attention paid to domestic travel trends.
So, we got one right. Yeah, I mean, the way that the industry was moving at the end of 2019 was very much across Southeast Asia, that China and India, these pillar dominant economies, were really starting to dominate tourism inflow, particularly China.
Yes.
But India was starting to send bigger numbers to countries like particularly Bangkok, Thailand, into Malaysia as well, Singapore. But you know, that again is a complete unknown right now. We're in a reset position where it's only about domestic travel. Now, the interesting thing about domestic travel in most countries in our region, Singapore excepted, because it doesn't really have that the size of landmass, is that domestic tourism has been quite strong, but it's never really been much of a focal point in terms of resources, marketing, and promotion. Some of the airlines have been quite good at this. AirAsia is obviously exceptionally good at that, but the actual tourism boards themselves have been focused much more on the inbound nature of tourism. Now, that whole reset as we have right now, is it temporary? Is this going to happen in the long term? I guess that really depends on how successful domestic tourism flows prove to be.
I mean, right now, like we were saying, you know, countries keep talking about transferring that outbound travel spend into inbound travel spend. But yeah, there's still that gap, isn't it? And until they know, are domestic tourists actually going to behave how we think they will, and they're going to bring X amount of revenue in? Yeah, it will be interesting to see whether they continue this strategy for this year.
It tends to overlook a little bit the fact, because it tends to look very much only at leisure travel. So, you know, we're looking at leisure travel trips. Can domestic travellers, you know, plug some of that gap of inbound visitors? But it doesn't really allow for the business travel aspect, which is a huge part, not just for hotels and airlines, but just the whole flow of tourists through a country. And you know, a lot of business travelers take extra time over a weekend, or spend extra time while they're in a destination. So the domestic focus really only focuses on leisure travel. Doesn't really help out those businesses that work in business travel, MICE, you know, those areas, because they need cross-border travel.
Yeah, that's true. And we were, you know, I said earlier, there's intra-ASEAN travel going to my one. Greater intra-ASEAN travel. Is that going to happen, do you think, Gary? I mean, last week we had this ASEAN summit, didn't we, where all of the leaders met over a webinar. Can't do it in person. And I think I counted 4 out of 10 of the leaders. So Cambodia, Malaysia, Brunei, Indonesia, 5, Vietnam, all saying we should open up borders. We need to open up borders. And not one has done that yet. Well, no. Okay, Cambodia, okay, they're kind of open, but you've got to pay $3,000.
Well, I think there's two aspects to that. When the ASEAN leaders or tourism leaders or any kinds of leaders get together, it's a talking shop. A lot gets said. Nothing ever happens. We've seen that over the years. Even going back to like the Asian financial crisis, the coordination between the region is relatively low. And that's largely because it is a very low-touch sort of organization. Yeah. It's not like the European Union. They basically try to assuage each other's differences, but there isn't a huge great deal of economic coordination going on. But as to your question about, you know, will there be more ASEAN travel after the pandemic? I think there will. I mean, it was strong before. It will be strong after. I don't think people are going to be wanting to sit on flights for too long. No. So you can take regional trips here of 2 hours, 3 hours. You can go to a lot of different places. Obviously, that's overlaid with the fact we don't know about the economic uncertainty, how people will feel about traveling. But you can also, in several countries, you can drive across borders as well. Yeah. So, yeah, I think intra-ASEAN is definitely going to be a focus. But coming back to your point about reopening the borders, they just seem to be miles apart. There doesn't seem to be much agreement.
No.
The reciprocal nature of, well, if we open, will you open?
Yeah.
Some countries, we're wondering whether Vietnam at the moment thinks whether it actually needs to reopen.
Yeah, we were saying that earlier. Maybe they're just going to stay closed. They're doing pretty well. They've got this big population.
Their economy is thriving.
Yeah, it was actually up, did you see? It was up Q2 on Q2 last year.
Yeah. But then other countries like Malaysia is definitely going to need some inbound tourism, particularly from its key markets, Indonesia, Singapore. So you said last week on the show, Hannah, that you think Singapore, Malaysia, some degree of travel will be opened up pretty soon. And there does seem to be some moves on that.
There is,
But again, it seems to be very phased and very gradual. Public health concerns, I suppose.
Yeah, and probably complicated with Singapore general election as well.
Also true.
Politicians don't want to to muck that one up, do they? Let the Malaysians in, suddenly there's a huge spike and then they lose the general election. So yeah, I don't think we'll see movement now till after that.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
So Gary selected as number 14 on our 2020s wish list, no to commoditizing travel through online shopping festivals. Where do we stand on that now?
Well, the complete opposite, I think. We would, you know, these online shopping festivals are all about discount product sales. Mm. They started mostly in China. I mean, Amazon's been doing them in the US, but in China they started, and they've really, really gained a foothold in Southeast Asia for sure. They're all about mass sale of consumer products at discounted rates.
Yeah.
But we started to see in recent years that hotels, airlines have also been jumping on this and offering special promotions around these online shopping festivals.
Yes.
I think they will have no choice this year. I think they will be offering even better discounts than before. Yeah. There'll be more of them. More players will be doing so. I think it's going to be really... I think a lot of marketers are actually looking at these festivals this year. Travel marketers are looking at these festivals this year as a real barometer of whether people are actually going to spend on travel. Mm. And if that means they have to spend on discounted travel, perhaps that's just what the industry will have to accept.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 7/7 coming up, don't we? That I can see Lazada, who's the local, the dominant e-commerce player here in Malaysia. I said they're already promoting this 7/7. We've seen people like Klook now sell hotels. Have you seen that on their website, kind of selling hotel vouchers? And they tend to do these big shopping festivals as well. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out next week, I think.
I would imagine our mobile phones will be ringing with lots of different messaging pre-promotions for these events.
Yes.
So we're moving on, Hannah. I think we only have two to go now.
Mm.
So number 15 on our list of our top 20 for the 2020s was one of yours, Hannah.
Yes.
You suggested that you would like to see a comeback of the travel agent, simplifying the conundrum of too much information. Now, I agree with that, and we both said thumbs up for travel agents back in January, but this has been a torrid year for agents so far. So how can we assure that travel agents rebound and stay relevant in a world where, sadly, online automation is going to dominate?
Yeah, I mean... my heart just goes out for travel agents at the moment. I know so many, and so many, you know, I was saying last week, they're on unpaid leave till the end of the year. They've taken massive, massive pay cuts or been forced to take annual leave and things. It's a really tough time, and I think the only way that they can continue to compete is by really focusing on those areas that are more complicated for customers to put together themselves. So if you're talking about domestic travel, which is, you know, what's normally the only route open to agents right now, is finding those places that are harder to get to or logistics that are harder to coordinate and putting it together in a package and having that extra information about how this activity is COVID safe and everything else. But they have to be really innovative. So I think it is likely we're going to see, you know, a lot of agents close down because they just simply, well, I mean, they've exhausted their cash flow. Right now, you know, they're on fumes anyway. But if they don't have that infrastructure, even the kind of will to innovate, they're going to die, basically. Yep. I think the only agents who are going to survive this are the innovative ones who are still looking for opportunities in this crisis. And there are very few opportunities, but there are still some there. Yep. And it's trying to just aggressively market that to customers.
Yeah. I was talking to a Grab driver the other day, and he was telling me that his friend is a travel agent, and that each year he arranges for the driver's family to do a trip, usually to Europe. Last year he said they did an 11-day trip to Switzerland, Austria, Germany, I think Netherlands, he said.
Mm.
He said they got a great deal, it was fantastic. They've been doing this for 4 years now.
Yeah.
And I said, so will you be doing it this year? He said, well, definitely not this year.
Yeah.
So what about next year? He said, no, I don't think next year. I said, what about your friend? Is he still arranging packages? He said, at the moment, no customers whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of agents that I know are now insurance agents, so everything else. So there's this, you know, question, are they going to go back to the industry even once the industry opens back up and once they start needing them? Who knows? Maybe they've found alternative income streams that are profitable. And travel is not a stress-free industry, as I think our listeners know, particularly to be a travel agent. Actually, you have a lot of stress, right? You've got angry customers sometimes. You've got the stress of dealing with overseas operators. It's not really an industry where you get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
And so potentially people in the industry might be waking up and realizing, hey, there's a stress-free life that I could do.
Yeah. I said before on one of the early podcasts, Hannah, you know, I grew up, my mum was a travel agent.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time in the agency just watching customers and watching, you know, stamping brochures and seeing these beautiful locations. And you could see it was difficult. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that was when the industry was very different to it is today. It was a bit more agent focused than it is perhaps now. But yeah, it's not an easy. Customers can be difficult in all sectors.
Yes.
But particularly travel, because it's quite a big ticket item. You know, you want everything to go right. And if you're entrusting an agent to book it for you, you know, you're very, very meticulous on each aspect of the journey.
Yeah, and responsible for them as well. You know, once they're overseas, you feel very responsible for them. And if something like COVID happens and your customers are stuck overseas, I can imagine their stress levels must have been off the charts.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So that brings us to our 20th and final travel wish for the new decade, which is a high priority for health and safety in travel. Gary, it seems like you were kind of a fortune teller back in January. You've got a lot of these spot on.
Yeah, well, this one came out, Hannah. We were talking about last year, Thailand floated this idea that it was going to make all inbound travelers demonstrate that they had medical insurance, because obviously the rise in numbers of tourists over recent years has put pressure on their public health systems. So they were going to ask, I don't think they actually did it in the end, but they were discussing this pretty seriously, requiring everybody to be able to demonstrate when they arrived that they had medical travel insurance, which seemed a pretty good idea. You know, the travel industry across our region has grown so fast, and people get sick where they're traveling, accidents happen, and that does place pressure on the funds of the country that is hosting them. That was an issue. Now, obviously, we did not know that a pandemic was coming, even though obviously there were warnings. Scientists have been warning for this for a number of years, but we really couldn't have predicted the scale of how this would happen and how it would actually just shut down the whole industry. So in terms of where this goes in future, we were just talking about this before the show, Hannah. You know, will we have to be vaccinated? Will it be a requirement to be vaccinated to live in a country and to travel to another country?
Yeah.
You know, will that be a part of your insurance?
Yes.
Will you not be able to get travel insurance unless you are COVID vaccinated?
Yeah.
Simply, we don't know. But health and safety generally, obviously, it's been taken over in terms of the virus itself. Mm-hmm. But here in Malaysia, for example, it's been dengue season.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge public health issue across Southeast Asia as well. Malaria can happen in parts of our region too. There are a lot of other illnesses that tourists need to be aware of. So there is this concern, I suppose, that people will only focus on the coronavirus in future. Let's not neglect some of the other health warnings that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, and there's that consideration that, let's say, 12 months down the line, post-pandemic, if there is ever a post-pandemic, you know, will this concern for health and safety actually still be there, or will people have very short-term memories? And just, you know, that's not really going to be a concern anymore.
I don't think so. I think this has changed consumer perceptions significantly. If you look at some of the statistics in terms of the products that people are buying right now, there's a real strong focus on personal health, personal safety, safety of families. You know, will this endure into 2021? Yeah, I think this is one of the trends that we, across all aspects of travel, lifestyle, consumption, I think this has really shaken people, particularly in our region.
So that brings us almost to the end of this 25th anniversary podcast, Gary. Our top 20 wish list for the 2020s Rewind edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Yeah, it does indeed, Hannah. So if we hope that you enjoyed the show. And as always, we'd love to read your comments and your feedback on anything that we've said or missed out or got wrong. So please send us a note by email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com. or via our Facebook page, The SEA Travel Show, or on Twitter, SEA Travel Show. And of course, we'll post the full 20 for the 2020s wish list on social media later this week.
We will. And look out for our daily travel and tourism insights, opinions, and podcast news on our LinkedIn page, The Southeast Asia Travel Show, and on our Instagram at SEA Travel Show. And of course, you can catch up on all of our 24 previous issues on the website, theseasiatravelshow.com. And on both Spotify and Google Podcasts. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on either platform.
And don't forget our Friday mini briefing e-newsletter, which this week will feature Sri Lanka. You can sign up for free via our LinkedIn page or just send us a subscribe message via social media.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's 25th anniversary podcast. We're both off to make new wish lists for the second half of 2020. and we look forward to talking Southeast Asia travel and tourism again with you really soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.